Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it.
The Debatables,
part of the Almighty Baller Radio Network.
Jimmy starts the drive, step back in the air.
Oh, heavy step back and kiss myself. Big time plays, big time plays. Woo!
Butler. Talking about the Chicago Bulls and NBA.
Your best source for coverage from the madhouse on Madison.
The ceiling is the roof.
In one corner, host Jordan Malley.
His talk about patience with this team and his talk about direction. He says that the level of patience needs to come with fans and that this thing can't happen overnight. Well, obviously it can't happen overnight, but where have we gone in the last 3 years that says that we have any type of future?
And in the other corner, co-host Matt Peck.
But there are plenty of people out there in Bulls fandom who might look at that potential playoff matchup and say, hey, they can upset the one or the two seed. Maybe they'll get to the conference finals. Maybe they'll get to the finals. There are Bulls fans out there dumb enough to believe that. If you consider yourself one of that population, I say for shame, wake the f*** up. But those people, those Bulls fans do exist.
Looking, finds Rose. Rose trying to get open, fires away. Bang! It's over! The Bulls win at the buzzer!
Kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
That's our goal, to get younger, at positions to get more athletic, and at the same time to retool, not rebuild.
The Debatables starts now.
Welcome into The Debatables, brought to you by Almighty Baller Radio. My name is Jordan Malley, alongside co-host Matt Peck. Today's show is sponsored by Steiner Sports Memorabilia. Steiner Sports is the leading producer of authentic sports memorabilia and hand-signed collectibles. From game-used jerseys to authentic pictures and so much more, whether you're looking to add something to your man cave or simply want to continue your collection, Steiner Sports has you covered. When listeners use the promo code ALMIGHTY at checkout, you'll receive 20% discount on all your purchases. Steiner Sports, the leading producer in authentic sports memorabilia. SteinerSports.com. Use the promo code ALMIGHTY. Well, not exactly how I thought this was going to turn out. We are recording live shortly after game one here on Sunday. So welcome in for the next 30, 45 minutes. We'll be breaking down this game one winner from the Bulls. First reaction, how surprised are you at this, Matt?
Dude, Jordan, I mean, I am very surprised and at the same time not at all surprised, because there's one thing we learned from watching this Bulls team all season is that you never know what the hell you're going to get. They go out there and on some nights and they beat some of the best teams in the league. You know, they have wins over San Antonio and Golden State, and they sweep Cleveland and all these wonderful things. And then they get swept by the Knicks, and they lose to Orlando, and they lose to Brooklyn. You never know what you're going to get. You know, this is like straight up Forrest Gump's mom kind of stuff that we're dealing with all year long. And hey, like it was really weird, because it was not the way that you expected this game to play out. It was sort of a tale of two halves. Like, the Bulls dominated inside, points in the paint and offensive rebounds in the first half. And then the Celtics sort of corrected that at halftime. But then after bricking everything in the first half, the Bulls start to make shots. And then after a bad, cold first half, Jimmy Butler kind of takes over in the second half, particularly the fourth quarter. This game was all over the place. And really, like, it was totally feasible for the Bulls to go in there and steal one of these games, because we've seen them be able to compete at that kind of level before. You just never know when you're getting it.
I think the rotation, too, was a little bit, I think it was a little bit reserved in the fact that Fred was testing out all these different lineups, you know, towards the end of the season, trying to figure out maybe what pieces fit best. And he kind of went back to the reserved lineup that maybe he showed in the beginning of the season with Mirotić, Butler, Lopez, Rondo, Wade on the floor. I was really impressed actually with the way Rondo played tonight. I thought he was part of the reason why the Bulls even had a chance in that first half after, like you said, they were missing a ton of shots. Even though he only went 6 for 15, I still think he played a vital role on the side of distributing and just kind of, I don't know, causing the Celtics to not be able to shoot shots, I guess. Another player I thought that had the opposite night would be Dwayne Wade, and we can talk about this a little bit more as it progressed, but I just felt like he was tired. He was hurt. It wasn't the way that we all saw at the beginning of the season. Maybe coming off this injury that he had coming back earlier than expected, maybe this is still affecting him and he's not telling anybody. He also did play 34 minutes.
I mean, he did play somewhere around 10 or 12 more minutes than he played in the couple of games he had coming back to finish the regular season. And his legs certainly looked a little rusty. Obviously, there was the hilarious dunk fail.
Wayne Wade smelled that a long all the way through. Oh, and the shot tire on the way up from Dwayne Wade. And wow, Dwayne Wade. There was a day when this was a no-doubter, but that day's gone.
That was like, wow, that screams Dwayne Wade is 35 and on the decline. I mean, he took off from that kind of far out, and as he was taking off, I was like, oh, he's not going to make that. Like, he's way too far out. He doesn't have those legs anymore. And lo and behold, of course, he screwed it up. But really, more than that, it's just the fact that we were kind of expecting a boost in Wade's level of performance because this was the playoffs. And he even said after the regular season concluded, I've been saving myself for the playoffs. We saw him give an amazing performance for the Miami Heat in last year's playoffs as they went to game 7 of round 2, kind of hoping that that might happen, but he just looked totally disinterested and incapable on the defensive end. And really, other than that one big bucket he had late in the fourth quarter, which was a big bucket, he was a non-factor offensively, 4 of 12. I guess looking at his box score now, I do see that he had 6 assists, so that's something. But, I mean, Dwayne Wade looks like one of the worst players on the court tonight.
Yeah, and if we're going to talk about anybody making defensive lapses, people will point to, well, because Portis was on the floor more minutes than he should have been tonight. And, I mean, he made up for that on the offensive side of the ball where Wade didn't. And to me, I think this is another thing that if – with this Bulls team, I think the way that Wade is approaching things is, dude, you got to stop with the putting up a shot, thinking you're getting fouled, and then sitting there and complaining to the ref. It's this Bulls team isn't centered around you at your prime anymore, where, yeah, you maybe should still get those calls, but you're not. And you'll see that a lot. In this game alone, I could say that there was 7 to 10 missed calls where I thought guys legitimately thought should have gotten fouled. And then on the flip side, it was Bobby Portis supposedly getting called for a foul where I'm still trying to find where he exactly hit Isaiah Thomas, but just stop complaining.
Yeah, that was a total mystery of a foul. It is frustrating to see that kind of behavior from a veteran like Wade.
Going around the entire lineup too, I saw guys like Mirotić. He takes a fadeaway three in the corner early in the first half. He's sitting there looking at the ref like, where's the foul? Like, that should have been something. Down the floor and play defense. And Mirotić is another guy I'm glad he only played 19 minutes tonight because he was atrocious.
We've talked about, we're really hot. Nikola Mirotić. Who were high
on.
He
was terrible. In 19 minutes, 1 of 9 from the field, 0 of 5 from downtown, 4 points. That's a terrible effort from Nico, who really came into these playoffs red hot. Like, he was shooting the ball really well in March and in April, and we were kind of hoping that he could be that X factor that this Bulls offense needed, right? It's like, where are you going to get production offensively besides Butler? And hopefully Rondo looks to be aggressive, which he was. You know, he was looking to get some layups early in this game. And then Dwayne Wade, it's like Nico kind of needs to be that other option offensively. But he was a ghost tonight. Thankfully, Robin Lopez stepped up and had a huge game. A double-double with 14 and 11 boards. 8 of those came on the offensive glass, creating a lot of those second-chance points that allowed the Bulls to stay in this game early when Butler was kind of a ghost and nobody was making shots.
My boy BP showing out tonight, 29 minutes, 19 points, 9 rebounds, 3 assists. The dude came out of nowhere. I mean, we haven't seen this type of Bobby Portis since I would say his rookie year. So I'm kind of confused now. What does Fred go to exactly what he did in this game if he wants to repeat success? Or do you think about maybe starting Bobby Portis in that lineup and giving him legit minutes after just one game?
Well, I saw from some of Hoiberg's post-game comments that he is, at least as of now, planning to keep his starting lineup as is with Mirotić in there and then bringing Portis in with the second unit. And I got to say, as awful as Nico was in this game, I kind of like that. I think that's the way he should go, because you expect Nico to not go 1-for-9 and 0-of-5 from downtown in back-to-back games, right? You can be optimistic that he bounces back at least a little bit and keep Portis, who was looking very confident. This did not look like a playoff debut. It looked like he was, I am a offensive option and an offensive threat for the second unit of this team. I'm ready to compete. And you got to keep that in that second unit. And the Bulls bench surprisingly outperformed the Celtics bench, which I was not expecting. I thought that the Celtics were a deeper team coming into this series. And if Portis can be a big piece of what the Bulls second unit is doing offensively, I feel like you have to keep rolling with that.
Yeah, Rondo and Portis together, when every time they were on the floor, they were running a nice pick and pop, and Portis was getting wide open every single time. The Celtics were at one point just like, just go ahead and shoot it, doesn't matter. And he was knocking everything down. So I'm hoping that Bobby Portis, like you said, maybe Nikola bounces back a little bit, but Bobby Portis still maintains somewhere between 22 and 25 minutes. If he's going to continue to have the hot hand, then you got to keep him out there. Defensively, okay, well, defensively he's not the greatest, but I don't think Nikola Mirotić is the greatest defender either. I mean, the dude gets blown past all the time.
No,
he got blown past four or five
not.
times in the Celtics game. So if it's a lesser of two evils, if whoever's got the hot hand, I think you stick out there on the floor, and I think that's what Fred did tonight. Let's talk about a few other players. So watching Jimmy Butler, he coming into the second half, he only had 8 points. He ended with 30 with huge, 14 points in the fourth quarter. He finished that stretch at the end of the third quarter with the last 8 points. And then he came out in the first part of the quarter and scored the first two. So Jimmy Butler picked it up at the end. So this is kind of we need to see more of this type of Butler. And if the Bulls want to advance and continue to win games.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you were looking at this matchup coming into this series and thinking, like, how do the Bulls have a shot here in this 1-8 matchup, you had to get the best version of Jimmy Butler. We've seen him play at, for the most part, an all-star level, and this year really an all-star starter kind of level. And it's not like this crazy thing where he's performing like Harden or Westbrook or even Isaiah Thomas, who averaged near 30. You know, he's been like a 23 or 24 points a night scorer. But he also is essentially running everything else. His assists are up this season, career highs and rebounds as well. Jimmy Butler does so many things to make this Bulls team go, and they don't have a prayer in this series unless he is the best player on the court every night. And when you're talking about Isaiah Thomas and what he's able to do offensively, Thomas is still a very weak defensive player. Jimmy Butler is hands down the best two-way player in this series. And he needs to be that in all of these games for the Bulls to have a shot. And I think the biggest thing that really iced this game in the Bulls' favor is that down the stretch of the fourth quarter, Butler switched on to Isaiah Thomas. And he really locked him down. He had a big block on one of Thomas's drives late in the fourth quarter. And he has the size advantage over Thomas. It very much reminds me of the Heat switching LeBron onto Derrick Rose after the Bulls crushed Miami in game one. It's like, okay, well, I'm the best defensive player on our team. I guess I'll guard their best offensive player. That's what Butler has to do with Thomas, and he has to deliver on the offensive end. That's the only way the Bulls win this series.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right with that. The transition from Butler guarding, kind of playing a rotation guard, to actually just focusing on Isaiah Thomas at the end in that fourth quarter. If the Bulls are going to play rotation and switch defense, that's fine. They're not going to play it very well. They didn't tonight. I didn't like the way that they were rotating and leaving guys constantly open. But if you're going to do that, then obviously let your best defender guard the best guy, the best offensive player on their team. And that kind of worked in the Bulls' favor tonight. I think a few things to look over is the Bulls held the Celtics to under 40% shooting from three, which I was actually kind of surprised looking at that number. It might have been skewed from the fourth quarter, but it seemed like first half they were draining threes left and right, and that's kind of where they were picking up from their mistakes. And the Bulls were capitalizing on a lot of second chance points and a lot of really tough rebounds. I mean, look at the rebound totals, 53-36. I think that tells the story, especially with defensive rebounds. It's 33-24. It's almost incomparable. So I think the Bulls did a great job on the defensive side of the ball, on the boards, and Robin Lopez had a massive game.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about Jimmy Butler as the needing to be the best player on the court, as the sort of the factor of individuals dictating the outcome of the series. If you're talking about team stats, that was the one that the Bulls had to have. Because in the two games that the Bulls beat the Celtics this season, and most of the impressive wins the Bulls had throughout the regular season, they were a team that dominated the glass. And they lost a little bit of that with the trade of Taj Gibson to OKC, but they are still capable of being a good rebounding team. Lopez obviously crashing the offensive boards. Butler and Felicio can do that as well. Rondo is a strong rebounder for an undersized guard. Butler has upped his rebounding game. They nearly doubled up the Celtics on the glass, and they have to do that because they are when you're talking about the talent on paper, they are the lesser of these two teams. But they need those second chance points. Really, that's what kept them in this first half when really there wasn't a whole lot working for them on the offensive end.
What's your biggest key, I guess, going into this second game, looking at what the Bulls were successful in doing, and that was out-rebounding? And obviously, the Celtics are probably going to go back and look at this film and, you know, say they didn't do a terrible job, but maybe make some adjustments as far as who they put out on the floor longer than other guys to kind of combat some of that, odd-shaped rebounding numbers that they ended up in game one. So going into game two, what's the biggest key the Bulls need to, I guess, worry about? What's something that you think they should worry about? What's something that the Bulls should focus on?
Another thing that we haven't mentioned yet that I think we definitely need to talk about because it's a factor is that the Celtics, the coaching staff, the players, and their star player in particular came into this game one with a very heavy heart and a preoccupied mind with the passing of Isaiah Thomas's little sister and this tragic car accident that happened Saturday morning. So, you know, there is that kind of like emotional adrenaline probably pumping through Thomas as they're, you know, sitting there during pregame warmups, and you kind of expected him to have a big night in that regard. But it's also, are you really focused? We saw Thomas at certain points, especially in the second half, he started to get really frustrated with some calls. He picked up a technical foul late in this game. And perhaps the entire Celtics team as a whole was just sort of mentally and emotionally preoccupied by that. They get punched in the mouth at home. Nobody expected the Bulls to win this first game. So you have to expect that Boston's going to come out with a crazy level of intensity and energy to start game two. I fully expect the Celtics to take a big lead over the Bulls early in game two. So the first key is going to be, can the Bulls survive that? Because a lot of times this season, when the Bulls get punched first, they just fold and they get, you know, blown out by 20 or 30 points. That's a real possibility in game two. The other thing I would point to is the fact that the Bulls won game one despite turning the ball over 19 times. And in their two wins over Boston in the regular season, they only turned the ball over 10 times. So really, when you're kind of flirting with that 20 point or that 20 turnover total, that gets really dangerous, and it's hard to win games when you're that careless with the ball. So the Bulls need to withstand that first punch and take care of the basketball to have a shot in game two.
Yeah, I think the heavy hearts that sat in Boston, especially with Isaiah Thomas and even around the country, people reaching out to him, but it's the most tragic thing that could ever happen in someone's life, and to do it and then have to go to work less than 24 hours later, it's going to affect guys. And I think that was part of there was some part with this team where something that tragic happens, it affects what's going on, the mindset going in. And so I think coming out game two, you're right, and I'm hoping that they don't get punched in the mouth. And I think maybe something that can combat that is Jimmy Butler having maybe a quicker start in that first half. I mean, you look at maybe instead of scoring 8 points, maybe Butler's taking more shots. I think turnovers is an excellent point, too. I did notice, I think the Bulls, every time the Celtics made a mistake tonight, the Bulls, within 5 seconds, turned it right back over. So, yeah, keeping a handle on the ball. I mean, it was ridiculous. Yeah, it was ridiculous. I mean, there's three or four times, I think, where the Celtics turn it over. I remember specifically two on Butler, where Butler comes down the floor and the one he steps into Isaiah Thomas in the air gets called for an offensive foul. Butler fumbles it in the corner on the other one too.
That was so dumb.
It was like really, really guys. And that, you know what? We need to talk about that play. That play, Butler getting charged with the offensive foul. Number one, do you really call that at that point? And two, it's Butler's fault. I mean, he did that intentionally, and it was an offensive foul. Fred was yelling on the side of the bench, but I don't think he really saw it from a good angle. But I mean, in a matter of seconds, the Bulls gave up a 9-point lead with 13 seconds left on the clock, and the Celtics were only trailing by four.
Yeah.
So that's another thing is closing out
games.
Yeah,
the Celtics went on an 8-0 run in like 40 seconds. And that's the other thing. Like, was anyone surprised by that? I was watching that the last 90 seconds of this game after the Bulls had built that 8-point lead, and you're thinking, oh, wow, the Bulls just stole game one. And everybody on Twitter is like, wow, the Bulls won game one. And I was like, whoa, guys, hold on. Back the truck up for a second. Have you been watching this Bulls team all season? Because if you've been watching this Bulls team all season, you know that no lead is safe, no matter how few seconds are left on the clock. I was fully expecting the Bulls to blow that away when the Celtics drilled that three, and then, you know, Thomas had, like, I think a driving layup to cut it to two, and there were still 13 or 15 seconds left. I was like, the Bulls can still totally lose this game, and they almost did. Like, if Butler doesn't, you know, kill a few seconds dribbling around and then, you know, knock it down a couple of clutch free throws, the Bulls handled the last minute of that game terribly. And that is one of the many weaknesses of this team. They are not very mentally strong late in games.
I think Butler's two free throws at the end of that game were massive. And if he's going to be any sort of toy eye candy for the Celtics, I think that's huge. Playoff crowd, 2-point lead. You need both of these buckets to ice this game, and Jimmy Butler did it in all-star fashion too. So with that, I think that's interesting too.
Because you just know, like, if Butler doesn't make those free throws and the Celtics get the final possession down two, that either is going to OT and the Celtics take momentum to OT and win, or they hit a three for the win. Like, either of those things were bound to happen if Butler missed either of those free
and
throws.
And that's why now I feel like even the talk is starting to transition around, well, maybe Jimmy Butler's better than a top 15 player. I think one game is not intuitive to be able to talk about that, but it'll be interesting how he approaches this next game and what we see out of him. I think one of my biggest factors for me is if Nikola Mirotic is shooting as awful as he does in the first quarter, first half, like he did again, Fred's got to pull him, yank him like he did, and let Bobby Portis play the legitimate minutes. Paul Zipser, need more out of Paul Zipser, too.
I think
when he's on the floor tonight, he didn't really do all that much. He scored 6 points, he had 2 rebounds, and he had a steal and a block, but he turned the ball over 3 times, too, so we need more out of him if he's going to play legit 22, 25 yeah. minutes. Are you a little bit surprised?
Zipser definitely looked like a scared rookie.
Are you a little surprised about who Fred decided not to play?
I mean, not really. I feel like as much as Bulls fans wanted Denzel Valentine to be an exciting rookie prospect this season, he never really had like a long enough stretch where he was a part of the rotation and performing at a high level. And Michael Carter-Williams, yeah, I guess you can use him as a defensive, you know, piece to the puzzle if you absolutely have
no
to.
Thanks.
But Jaren Grant played well enough down the stretch of the season that you're not playing Michael Carter-Williams over Jaren Grant. And, you know, Joffrey Laverne had a few games where he, you know, hit some shots from the outside when essentially he was getting minutes over Felicio, which I never really understood. So, I mean, I feel like this rotation, this 9-man rotation Hoiberg has with Portis, Felicio, Zipser, and Grant off the bench is what I expected, because these other guys, either in Laverne and Morrow or MCW and Valentine, are either too new to the system and not guys you want to trust in the playoffs, or guys that just don't really bring a whole lot to the table.
I can't disagree with you on that. I think it's just funny that the guy that they went out and trade for in Cameron Payne is now dressed in wasn't even allowed to dress tonight. Him and Isaiah Cannon are sitting on the bench.
He's using inactive.
You gotta be kidding me. So in two pieces, if they were gonna do this playoff run like we all expected, those two pieces in McDermott and Taj Gibson, how would they would have, I can't imagine they would negatively affect this team. So I think if they were trying to really push for a playoff win, playoff series win, that type of move from that angle looks even more idiotic. But I digress on Cameron Payne.
Yeah, and I think it's like we're going to try to make the playoffs even despite this trade where, I mean, Taj and Doug were two of their top six players before that trade. You lose two of your top six players and you're still going to try to make the playoffs. But, they made that trade because they wanted to get something instead of nothing for both of those guys, because they were both likely going to be gone. and they didn't want a relapse of Pau Gasol when everybody grilled him for not trading Pau at the deadline when they weren't, you know, legitimately going to be contending last season. At the same time, it's like, okay, so you got something instead of nothing with that trade, but you're not getting anything out of Cameron Payne right now. You're not getting anything really out of Laverne and Morrow, and you gave OKC a draft pick. So did you really help yourself all that much? And unless they really have big plans to like play Cameron Payne big minutes in the D League this summer and then turn him into either a starting guy in the backcourt or one of their first guys off the bench in the backcourt, what did that trade accomplish?
I think that's a lot of us are sitting around asking that question, like, well, what did this do to further the Bulls future? And so I guess what I'm going to ask now is, this win now scares me a little bit, because now I feel like this furthers the agenda that Garpax has. You know, I mean, every win the Bulls add to their resume this season is just going to further their justification for retooling, not rebuilding.
Retool, not rebuild.
And that scares the shit out of me, because now they're going to go out and do the same thing that they have done for the last 5-7 years, sign a mid-level free agent, pick somewhere in the middle of the first round, and we're back to the same old bullshit. So every win, I feel bad for not, like, I'm not rooting against the Bulls in any way, because I think it's fun when they win, but as far as like looking at legitimate shots at a championship contention, it just hurts.
To get younger, to get more athletic.
Yeah. Well, because honestly, like, what's the best case scenario? Do the Bulls actually pull this first round upset and knock off Boston? I mean, it's not impossible. I think after watching game one, I feel like some of Boston's weaknesses have been exposed, but I still feel like they're the better team. I still feel like they're going to come back and win this, because remember, you know, the Bulls win game one all the time and then they promptly lose. Sometimes they lose the next four after winning game one. So we're still probably going to see that, but best case scenario, you get past Boston and then what? I mean, you have a tough matchup regardless of who comes out of that 4-5 series, because you really don't match up that well against Atlanta or Washington. And you're not beating Cleveland if you get that far. Not going to happen. So, like, what purpose are you serving here by getting, well, I guess, hey, let's sell a few more tickets for a couple of home playoff games. Maybe they'll get to a third home playoff game, game six against Boston. Woo! What the friggin' do? Garpax, way to go.
You know what makes me even more angry is watching people all of a sudden now coming out for the playoffs, watching a Bulls team maybe for the first time in 2-3 months, and all of a sudden people start applauding Fred Hoiberg, all right, applauding adjustments and applauding his timeliness and some of the moves that were made on this team. I'm like, I'm sitting here like, guys, have you picked up your phone and typed in the Chicago Bulls in the last 3 months? Like you can't be serious with Fred Hoiberg applauding what he's done. The dude didn't know his rotation until probably 3 hours before tonight's game. He didn't know his rotation for the first 82 games of the season. So I get it. I'm not blaming him. And this is what I told a lot of people, is I'm not blaming him for what happened in the last couple seasons, but he's only a fraction of the blame, but still, like, come on, let's not all of a sudden have national praise for Fred Hoiberg, who this is his first playoff appearance in 3 years and doing it with a battered up, beaten down team of superstars and veterans and unaccomplished rookies. So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like, I saw so many people on Twitter right after this game one win being like, wow, like, you know, I've given Hoiberg a lot of crap and a lot of grief this season, but like, gotta give him credit for getting that road win in game one, and having confidence in the young guys like Portis and Felicio and Grant to play them minutes down the stretch.
Never
like,
had I'm sorry,
what are his what are his other options? Like, really, you're gonna give him credit for finally locking down a 9-man rotation in, you know, the first playoff game of the year when it's not hard. It's simple musical chairs of guys who are new and or bad. And the best of a pretty rotten litter of people to pick from as far as rounding out your bench. Like, I don't know how or why Hoiberg should get credit for that.
Bobby Portis sat his ass on the bench for 2 weeks in March. He didn't play one game. So people say they're crediting him for allowing young guys to go out there. Well, okay, most of the guys that are on the Bulls bench right now are young and inexperienced. So, I mean, you're picking between a bunch of guys that at times are sitting on the bench, can't even get minutes on the floor. And then other times they're being pressed every night to go out there and play 30 plus. Like, it doesn't make any sense. And he didn't have confidence in Bobby Portis. That makes me the most angry, is because Bobby Portis has seemed all season like he's been in no man's land, like somebody altered his game. And now all of a sudden we're seeing the guy that we all thought the Bulls took in his rookie season, when we're all saying hashtag free Bobby Portis. So,
right.
I don't know. That pisses me off. I mean, if people are going to credit Fred for, you know, putting guys that are inexperienced out there and letting the young guys roll, but what other options, like you said, do they have? Nothing.
Well, exactly. And I guess that's just like the low bar that has been set, right? What does it take for us to be impressed by Fred Hoiberg? It's like, oh, what does it take for us to be impressed by President Trump? Well, he didn't blow up the country yet today. Great. Great job, President.
We have to figure out what's going on. There's something going on and it's bad. There's a problem. There's something wrong. Something's going on. We've got to figure out what's going on.
You're bomb, 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 bomb. We have to find out what's going on.
I called the mayor. I said, what's going on?
What's going on?
What is going on, Mika?
For a term of what's going on.
I said, what's going on?
We have to find out what is going on.
Like, come on. Like, okay, you found a rotation and you didn't play the guys that shouldn't be playing. Like, congratulations. I don't get it. I really don't get it.
I got a theory for Bulls optimism this weekend. So I think a lot of people are praising and trying to find something to like latch themselves onto after these two Blackhawks losses where people were disgusted. I feel like they needed something this weekend to kind of hold on to and grasp to, and like, yeah, we're still Chicago. Yeah, we could still win. And the Bulls served it up to them. I thought yesterday after the Blackhawks loss, I'm like, great. Now I have to go tomorrow and watch Bulls basketball. Hopefully they don't get blown out by 30. And they actually surprised me today. So it's good to see optimism, but let's not get carried away. Like if you watched 82 games of Bulls basketball this season, let's not get carried away.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You just gotta wait for the other shoe to drop, and I am waiting. I don't like being this skeptical, you know, kind of smarmy asshole of a Bulls fan, because it's really not fun. Like, I miss being a Bulls fan who is actually excited to get geared up for the playoffs. Even back in as recently as 2014-15, when I thought we had, you know, we were going to take another shot at LeBron and Cleveland. We had a 2-1 series lead on them. Game three, Rose's buzzer beater. Like, I was still like, yes, like, oh my gosh, Bulls playoffs. It's so exciting. But now, over the last two seasons of this garbage and this up and down monotony and locker room problems and all this crap, it's just like, it's so hard to even get excited about unexpected wins like this, because in the back of your mind, you're thinking, I know this team. I know this team. The bad is coming. The bad is coming. And you can't talk yourself out of that because you've been watching it all season long, Jordan.
I got to test your theory on something. So Rondo and Wade on the floor at the same time. Is this still, can you sense, because I can sense some type of underlying beef that they say that they've gotten over and they've gotten past, but just watching those two guys on the floor together, they just don't seem like they fit at all. And I'm interested if anybody else picked up on this and how this is going to transition into the rest of this series, because watching those two on the floor, it's like they struggled to decide who was running the offense, and Wade just seemed like he wanted to stand there and do nothing. And Rondo's flying around left and right, you know, dishing out assists, and it doesn't seem like they play well together on the floor. Or is there some type of beef where these two are like not forgetting it just because it's the playoffs, but still carrying on what they brought as far as baggage last 2 months of the season?
I definitely think that the Wade Rondo animosity is still there. Like, it's palpable.
It has
right?
to be.
First of all, you have the, you know, we're three alphas talk from Rondo at the beginning of the season, sort of him putting his foot down to say, hey, you might be three-time champion Wade and this might be Butler's team, but I've won a championship. I was at some point not too long ago considered one of the best floor generals in the game. I still think I am one of them. and I'm going to come in here and put my foot down. I want to run the offense. And then he was totally, you know, cut at the legs by Hoiberg after that benching. And then, of course, there was the Rondo sticking up for the kids when Wade and Butler, primarily Wade and Butler following his lead, called out the young guys on the team for not trying hard enough. Which, by the way, Wade, how about you get back on defense if you're going to call people out for their lack of effort, dude? And so that was like the second chapter of the is Wade Rondo, have they actually put all this nastiness behind them? And then you're right. I was watching this game tonight, and it just seems like they aren't on the same page. And there was one little detail that I noticed as I was watching, and it could be nothing. I could be overanalyzing it, but it was like either a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-2 fast break for the Bulls in the first half, and Wade was bringing the ball up in this transition, and he was looking to Rondo, and he tried to make a pass to Rondo, but it was just like a little bit behind him, and it sailed out of bounds. And Rondo and Wade had this kind of brief, uncomfortable moment of eye contact, and they kind of made this like awkward high five as they went back to get back on defense. But it just looked like two teammates who are totally not supportive of one another, as opposed to two teammates who, if something similar like that happened and a fast break goes wrong, it's like, okay, let's talk about that, or, you know, pat on the butt, high five, don't worry about that, or like, my bad. There was no my bad from either of the guys. They just had this awkward, like, backhanded high five, and then they just like went their separate ways back down the court. And it was just like this ugly moment of, these are supposed to be two of the veteran leaders on this team, and they still really don't appear to get along with one another.
Yeah, and it's, I don't know, maybe it's just from me watching this team all the time and noticing this, and that's why I was kind of curious. I wonder if people outside Bulls Nation understand this, like this underlying kind of tension that's held between, and I don't know where Butler sits in all of this, but when Butler's on the floor with Rondo, it seemed to be all right, but my sense just from watching Rondo, and like you said, maybe I'm digging a little too deep into this, but it seemed like every time Rondo had the ball, he was looking for one of the younger guys on the team to dish to and be that next guy up. And like I said earlier, Bobby Portis and him were working tonight, and Bobby Portis had the hot hand and didn't seem like he could miss. He was 8-for-10. So I don't know. Interesting as the playoffs move on, and I'm hoping that this isn't the Wade that, you know, is going to be what we see for the rest of this series and the rest of the playoffs, whichever comes first. I hope there's a switch somewhere that Wade, you know, picks it up, turns it around, and same with Mirotić. But any final thoughts? Did you change your mind as far as the series coming, going into game two, where the Bulls are winning? Their Bulls are up 1-0. Did you change at all your kind of outlook on the series? Are you still not convinced?
I'm still not convinced the Bulls are going to win the series. I think now, as opposed to maybe saying that the Celtics were going to win it in five, maybe I'll give the Bulls, you know, pushing it to six, just because they, you know, the Celtics clearly have some flaws. And if the Bulls are able to at least once more in the next four games do what they did tonight and dominate the glass and, you know, limit Boston behind the 3-point line to a reasonable percentage, and Jimmy Butler has another big night, and at least one role player in game one, it was Portis, who might it be, maybe Nico, a role player steps up, then maybe, yeah, they win another one, they push it to six. But am I changing my who wins this series prediction? Absolutely not. And the one final thought that I'll pose to you, Jordan, is sort of talking about and finishing up this whole Wade and Rondo playoff performance conversation we're having is, I was watching this game, and I was thinking, man, D-Wade looks like garbage. And wow, do I really hope that Dwayne Wade opts out of the second year of his contract and leaves. But really, if Dwayne Wade is looking at himself in the mirror after a so-and-so regular season where he missed a handful of games, and if he doesn't really give the Bulls much more than he gave them tonight in this playoff series, which is probably going to be their only one, he's got to know that it's hard to turn down $24 million that he has, that the Bulls are ready to hand him next season, because who else around the NBA is giving a 35, going to be 36-year-old D-Wade that kind of money? The guy looks done.
No one. And that's you bring up a great point, because it's, in a way, it's, if Wade is thinking about opting out, this is sort of a tryout. I mean, teams that are already in, you know, in playoff contention, championship talks, if he's really trying to dedicate himself to go win another ring on another team for less money, this is a tryout for him. And I don't know, like, what what team would benefit from a Dwayne Wade that we saw tonight on any of these championship team contenders, Golden State, Spurs, the Cavaliers, which probably be the most heavily favored out of all of them? None of those teams to me benefit from a Dwayne Wade being a player that he wants to be still on a team where he's playing 25 to 30 minutes a night. So there's a lot of factors, and that's leading me to believe that he's going to probably opt back in for the money. I mean, that's thinking outside of just how much he's going to make. Is he going to be willing to commit to a role where he's not going to start on a championship contending team, where he's going to have to play less minutes, maybe in a bigger role, working with the bench? And that's something he seems like he's not committed to with the Bulls at all. So I'm with you. I think if he opts out, hallelujah, awesome. Thanks for coming and playing for your hometown team for 1 week, but we'll see you later, Dwayne Wade. If he comes back, then that's scary, because if that's what we're going to get from him moving on, and this is kind of a step down, and we're finally seeing that step down from him, then the Bulls, I mean, it's not going to look good next year.
Jerry might as well take that $23 million and flush it down the toilet, because that would just be, especially for this Bulls team that's in transition and trying to get younger and trying to
get younger,
you know,
to
whether
get
they
more athletic.
Go full rebuild and trade Butler or keep Butler and kind of try to retool around him. Whichever way you go with that plan this coming offseason, Dwayne Wade should have no part of any of that. He does not fit that plan in any way. And by God, I am so terrified that he's going to look at his own performance, give himself a quick self-evaluation and say, yeah, I'm not getting $24 million anywhere else, and I'm already back home in Chicago. Might as well just stay here and play for another season. Maybe I'll play 60, 65 games, and we'll go back to the playoffs as an 8 seed again. It'll be fun.
Well, that's going to about do it here on the Debatables. Your Chicago Bulls are up 1-0 in the series. The next time they play is Tuesday at 7 p.m. Central Time on TNT. So make sure you follow that. We're going to be doing a podcast in probably a show right after that series again. We did one tonight, so we're going to probably do another one. We'll be also available on Dash this week, brand new Almighty Baller Radio. Go ahead and download the Dash Radio app 24/7, 365. Commercial-free radio. It's the greatest thing ever. It's in your pocket. It's free. Go ahead and download it. Our channel will be there. We'll be there Thursday mornings from 6 to 7 a.m. Central Time, and then 8 to 9 a.m. Central Time. So go ahead and download that. We'll be there weekly on Thursdays. Follow us on Twitter at Debatables. Go ahead and look for all of our content at almightyballer.com. You can find all of our shows there. Any show we have archived is going to be available at almightyballer.com. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. Everywhere you find podcasts, you'll find us. For Jordan Malley and Matt Peck, we are out. Deuces.
Do you look at my favorite team and do you fucking say, that's a team that's committed to building a champion? Do you say that to yourselves?
Follow the Debatables on Twitter at Debatables. Subscribe to the show on iTunes or at almightyballer.com.